Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Balaba Jaya Giri Varadhari Jaya Giri Varadhari Gopi Jana Balaba Jaya Giri Varadhari Jaya Giri Varadhari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Jashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana 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 Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Jaya Kunja Bihari Jaya Mishnupad Paramahansa Pribrojakacharya Shtatarasata Shishimad His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada Ki, ISKCON Founder, Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrindaki, Namacharya, Srila Haridas Thakur Ki, Prem Segaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Garadhar Shivas Arigaur Bhaktivedanta Ki, Sri Sri Radha Krishna Go Gopagopina Shyamakunda Radha Kuri Giri Govardhana Ki, Sri Vrindavan Dhamma Ki, Shri Mayapur Dhamma Ki, Ganga Mai Ki, Jumura Mai Ki, Bhakti Devi Ki, Tulasi Devi Ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta Ki, Jainatai Gaur Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo
bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om
namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Datvemam yachamanaya vishnave ya pada trayam radham indra padam hitva tatas siddhim avapsyati datvemam yachamanaya Vishnave yapadatrayam Radham Indra padam hitva Tatas siddhim avapsyati Datvemam yachamanaya Vishnave yapadatrayam Padam Indra Padam Hitva Padam Tatas Siddhim Avapsyati Dattva, giving in charity, imam, this entire universe, yachamanaya, who is begging from him, Vishnave, unto Lord Vishnu, ya, Bali Maharaj, padatrayam, three paces of land. Radham, achieved. Indrapadam, the post of Indra. Hitva, giving up. Tata, thereafter. Siddhim, perfection. Avapsyati, will achieve. In the period of the eighth Manu, among the demigods will be the Sutapas, the Virajas, and the Amrita Prabhas. The king of the demigods, Indra, will be Bali Maharaj, the son of Virochana. Bali Maharaj gave a gift of three paces of land to Lord Vishnu, and because of this charity, he lost all the three worlds. Later, however, when Lord Vishnu was pleased because of Bali Maharaj's giving everything to him, Bali Maharaj will achieve the perfection of life. Purport. In Bhagavad Gita 7.3, it is stated, Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschid yatati siddhaye. Out of many millions of people, one may attempt to achieve success in life. This success is explained here. Radham indra padam hitvatata siddhim avapsyati. Siddhi means achieving the favor of Lord Vishnu, not the yogic cities. The yoga cities, anima, lagima, mahima, prapti, prakamya, ishitva, vasitva, and kama vashayita, are temporary. The ultimate city is to achieve the favor of Lord Vishnu. So Bhagavatam, then, its nature is it always deals with the essence. What's the actual real importance that is there? What we really have to gain, what we really have to learn. Because so much knowledge is there that you can do to try to improve the external situation, the material situation. And, you know, so the more you learn, the more you can deal with a wider variety of situations and ability to gain benefits from those situations. Unfortunately, the ability to gain those results will end at the end of the lifetime, if not sooner. And then the benefits that are gained also have just a temporary effect on the living entities. Because the living entity being eternal, there won't be any satisfaction in something less. It's just the way it is. You know, it'd be just like, let's say you're hungry. And if I give you one grain of rice, that's it. You won't be satisfied. Now, of course, you can say, no, but it's rice. There's nourishment there and everything. I can talk it up. I can make it on a fabulous arrangement. I mean, as it is when you go to really high-end restaurants, they give you very small portions. So it's just a bit smaller of a portion, but, you know, I can really do it up. But will you be satisfied? No, you can't be satisfied. That's the point. So the soul can't be satisfied in the material situation. Though everybody talks about how great it is and how fabulous it is. But that's just the point, it's just talk. On one side there's that great concept that I will really be happy here. And on the other side, then there's always that pessimistic, you know, it's just the way the world is, you know, we're just being realistic and, you know, like that. So you have these two aspects always going on. The hope that it'll be nice, but the understanding that it's not. You know, so this makes for a big problem for the living entities. So here the Bhagavatam points out that when we say siddhi, or perfection, that means not yoga and not well-boiled potatoes. Right? It means developing love for Krishna. That's the position. So siddhi means you come to that platform, you please the Lord. That's siddhi, that's perfection. Because working with material energy is not what's going to be pleasing. It's recognizing this energy belongs to Krishna and using it in connection to Him. We could give an example. Let's say we go into a very wealthy man's house. And we use his things in his house. Right? We're not recognizing him. We're not doing it for him. We're just doing it for ourselves. Okay? Now, in this dealing, I deal very well. I go into the kitchen, I use things, I make things, I clean up, I put everything back in its place properly. So I'm very conscientious because of my knowledge and my training and my culture. I keep everything perfect. I sit on his couch, you know, I don't, you know, mess up the pillow. When I get up, I fix the pillows. You know, we put the remote back where it goes. We do everything perfectly. We don't leave a mess in the bathroom. But even though we do all this perfect, such knowledge, such skill, such consideration, will we please the owner of the house? No, because we're not supposed to be there. Right? So that is the whole point of no matter how knowledgeable and skillful and cultured we are in the material world, if you don't recognize the Lord in everything that we're doing, we're like that person who broke into the house. It's unlawful. So amongst people that do that, now they'll consider, wow, he's really special. He really takes care of the house. You know, I like to make as much mess as possible, right?
Does that make sense? You know, it's like going to the hotel. Make as much of a mess as possible because you can, right? You know, so. But the whole point is that perfection means that you're doing, because it's about Krishna. You're recognizing Krishna. That's the first stage. Second stage is that then you follow the rules that Krishna gives. But the third stage, or the highest, is that you do all that to please Krishna. Right? You're conscious of Him. You do things that are favorable to Him. Why? To please Him. So that's called pure devotional service. That's what we're trying to do. So that's siddhi. That's perfection. So we see as here, we're going through so many of the manus, and they'll just list them one after another. But with Bali Maharaj, you'll see they'll stop and discuss. Why? Because he's perfect. So Bhagavatam being a Puranic literature, then by definition, it must have a list of all the kings, all the Prajapatis, all the manus, all these things must be given. But you'll see that Bhagavatam only stops and discusses those individuals that there is some benefit in devotional service. How they were great devotees, or how they interacted with great devotees. You know, something to do with devotional service. Otherwise, why discuss them? It's the form, so you use it. You know, it's just like if you want to write a haiku, great, you use that form. But unless it's about Krishna, then it's a waste of time. So Bhagavatam, it uses the form of Purana, because that's the best form in this age. It's the most universal, everyone can appreciate. But at the same time, it's only about Krishna. Because all the mundane knowledge and skills, that's already been given in Mahabharata. You want knowledge and skills? Learn Mahabharata. That's actually how you'll be successful on the material platform. Use anything else, it'll always be very temporary. Mahabharata will give you temporary, you know. But anything else will give you really temporary, you know. So that's the whole point here, is that Bali Maharaj is perfect because his surrender to the Lord, giving everything to the Lord. And we see is he attained the position of Indra because of that surrender. He gave the universe to the Lord being pleased. Now he'll give him, at the next Indra, lordship over the universe. We don't hear of him doing 100 ashwamedha yagyas and all that like our present, you know, like they all do. Bali Maharaj is unique because devotional service is so much more powerful than Rupa Goswami in Nectar Devotion. He says that taking prasad, he says you can't give an equivalent on piety. But I think he compares it, just to get an idea, he compares it to, I think, 10,000 ashwamedha yagyas. Like that. Does that make sense? You know, so that means you could be Indra 100 times just taking prasad once. Yeah, so it's not a big deal, right? You know, so... But I guess Indra doesn't know that. Otherwise, every time someone would go to take prasad, he'd send Menaka or somebody to make sure you didn't, right? You know. But he doesn't bother in this area. Because he figures if you're doing devotional service, you're not going to use it on the material platform, so he's cool, right? So this is the whole thing to be learned, that we're learning the histories and a chronology that's there in how history works. I mean, the Bhagavatam works in chronology. Modern academia, due to their lack of intelligence, may not appreciate it. But it's because it's being told in a story form. Then that form means you go according to the interest of the audience. So if in telling a story they want to know more detail about the activity there or a person there and that, then you go off and explain that to the satisfaction of the person you're talking to. Then after you go back and continue the chronology. But because it's personal, therefore impersonal scholars cannot understand this. And they'll say it's not chronological. And they get very upset when you use the word even. But what to do? you know, Krishna already addresses their predicament in the Gita as the, you know, under the four impious persons who don't surrender because their intelligence is stolen by illusion, right? Doesn't mean they don't have great mechanical intelligence and that they can't use it in very wonderful ways. They just can't use it in connection with God consciousness, that's all. So that's what we mean by stolen by illusion. Doesn't mean that they, you know, sit there and just twiddle their thumbs or, you know, make incoherent noises or stuff. We mean that they can't use it in God consciousness. That's the whole thing. So here's the chronology is not the important thing. The history is not the important thing. It's the discussion about devotional service that's been done before by the great personalities. That's the important thing. So in other words, bhakti that is discussed in a historical form, or bhakti discussed in a logical form as Vedanta Sutra, or bhakti discussed in a philosophical forum as the Upanishads. Does this make sense? Or as medicine, or, you know, whatever is the Vedic sciences, they're just discussing devotional service, but they're using the secondary, the medium of discussing the particular topic or the format that is attributed to that topic, right? Vedanta Sutra has to be in sutra form. It won't be in poetry, right? So like that, they follow those forms. But the whole purpose is how it connects to Krishna. But because people take it that this literature is about that secondary form, then they take that as the most important thing and get into the secondary elements of just how, you know, the histories and who's here and who's there and like this. But those are nice, but those are only in as much as they support the appreciation and practice of devotional service. That's the real purpose. So in hearing about the Manus, the real thing is about their connection to the Lord. The Lord's creation, how he maintains the creation, because that's part of the discussion, is his maintenance of the creation. But even more, then we see how he protects those who are surrendered. Right? So then in maintenance, we're hearing about the Manus. But in Bali Maharaj, we're hearing how he nourishes. You understand? So we see is that the difference, it goes deeper. That's the uniqueness that the Bhagavatam gives. It's just about devotional service. All the Vedic literatures are only discussing devotional service, but because they're using so much detail on the secondary that we get distracted and completely forget about the primary. Like Ayurveda will only think health. We don't think, how is this working? Krishna in the Gita says he's the healing herb. Right? So if he's the healing herb, that means every medicine that you make with Ayurveda is working only because of its connection to the Lord. So therefore you take, and then the laws on how you make it then would be taken important, because if Krishna's the power of the medicine, then and so then it's about him. So making the medicine is about him. Giving the medicine, taking the medicine, is all about Krishna. So that means they'll make the medicine according to the rule that it says, not according to how much money you can make. Does that make sense? Because there's restrictions on how much you can make in a particular season, in a particular place. There's all these things. And so that's why previously you'd hear an Ayurvedic doctor tell you, I know this one guy, he makes this medicine. You should go to this place and get it from him. Rather than saying, oh, I got that medicine. Because they can't make it in that place. Or you can only make a certain amount. That's why the guy doesn't have so much and he has a stock of it. He can only make 100 bottles of it in a year. So that's the rule. Then it has the potency. Otherwise, you can make 1,000 bottles, but one bottle will only have the potency of 1/10 of a bottle. So you can make 10,000 bottles, and it'll have 1/100 of the potency. So sometimes people say, why doesn't the Ayurvedic medicine work? Because they make too much of it. Does that make sense? It's commercial use, because it has a potency. It's like a rose. You make it bigger, but the same amount of smell is there, that's all. But it's a bigger flower, there's less smell to go around. You know, or strawberries. They make them bigger. There's less flavor. You know, the smaller little dinky wild ones, those have the most flavor. Does that make sense? You know, it's like if I take Dal and I want to make it more, I just put more water in it. So it doesn't make it any better. It's the same amount of Dal. Just the volume's greater. Right? Does that make sense? So you follow these rules because they're Krishna's rules. Then I make it according to the thing. I remember that it's about Krishna. Therefore, I chant the mantras that go along with it. And there are mantras. Right? That's what makes it unique. Then, having chanted all the mantras, I offer that medicine to the Lord. Having offered it to the Lord, now the person that's going to take it, you know, you've diagnosed and everything, I give it to them with by chanting the mantra. They accept it chanting the mantra. They take it chanting the mantra. You do that, it should be that. It touches your tongue, it works. That's what Ayurveda describes. So, now, have we ever heard this description before? Good chance, no. Why not? Because everybody's into the secondary aspect of the medicine, just the technical point, rather than what actually makes it work, which is Krishna. So what we discussed here is actually the essence of the Ayurveda. Now the detail on how you make the medicine and what medicine goes with which disease, that whole science which is given by Krishna, that's the only thing that's studied. It's not how it connects to Krishna and how to use it connected to Krishna and why you should even maintain health because of service to Krishna. So that's the essence of the Ayurveda. So that will never be seen. You understand? That's the difference in the Vedic approach, is that when you're dealing with the essence, it means Krishna. How it connects to Krishna, that's the essence. All these other things are details. Right? And the detail, not that the detail's not important, but if you have detail without the primary or its connection to Krishna, then what do you actually have? Does that make sense? You know, it'd be just like I know every pot in the kitchen. I know the history of it. I know who invented that particular pot. I know where it came from, so the uniqueness that came from there. I know all the different techniques you can do with that pot, all the different preparations you can make using that in so many amazing ways that even other people who are good at cooking wouldn't even know about. It's like amazing. The guy can go on for hours and hours and hours and hours, but he can't cook. That's modern knowledge and skills. It's useless. For the soul. For the body, great. You can take care of the body really nice. But it won't take care of the soul at all. You know? I think, isn't there a phrase, something like, he gained the world but he lost his soul? Yeah, something like that. So, that's the whole point. That's material knowledge and skills. That's material endeavor. You can gain so much, but actually for who you really are, you gain absolutely nothing. So that's why we see the Bhagavatam. It gives all these things because that's the format that it has. Right? Because you have to have, because it's a nice thing, because people like stories. But at the same time, those stories should be in connection with Krishna. That's the uniqueness of the Bhagavatam. Right? It's exclusively showing pure devotional service. Right? Any questions or comments? Yes. You have this gizmo. Orange color, thank you.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. How to be encouraged in performing devotional service?
How to be?
Encouraged? Like enthusiastic?
Encouraged?
Yes.
Encouraged.
Encouraged.
Okay.
To, do devotional service, okay. Even though we are full with bad qualities.
Well, we have bad qualities. But who has the bad qualities?
The conditioning.
The conditioning has. In other words, according to our previous activities, we have mind, intelligence, senses, body, that matches that mentality. So then it will have particular qualities, abilities, and all that. So technically the soul doesn't have that. The soul is liberated, but because it identifies with the material or the external, that's why we call it conditioned. But as soon as it gives up that identification and identifies as the soul, as servant of Krishna, then that's not there. That's why for Vaishnavas, the process of prayaschitta actually isn't really a process. Prayaschitta, is for materialists. That's what it's for. It's because it'll only have an effect on the particular body you have in mind and all that. Let's say you've done something this life that's sinful, then by punishment, the next life you'll be freed from that reaction, so the quality of the gross and subtle body you have will be better than if you weren't punished. But it won't have any effect on the soul. The soul still has the same attachment to the mundane. So as soon as we understand this, then we understand that therefore good qualities are only developed through devotional service. You can't develop them some other way. Right? It means it's just like you have the saying, it takes money to make money. Right? So in the same way, it takes piety to develop piety. So if you want to develop all these nice, be good, be nice, and everybody's all going to be lovey-dovey and all that, you actually have to have some good qualities to start with to invest in the process. And in Kali Yuga, those qualities are kind of few and far between. Right? So therefore, but the soul naturally has inherently good qualities. So they have six inherent qualities, and if they develop the Vaishnav mood, then that develops to 26. Right? The six are kind of inherent that are there. The sense of fairness, the friendship, like this. There's six different qualities that are inherent in the soul. And you can see it in people. These qualities, any culture, they all have them to some extent. How they display these, it may be closer to the Vedic tradition or a bit more distorted. You know how you say it? So it's just a matter of what's there. But qualities are only developed in this age through devotional service. Then from devotional service, then you can, by becoming purified, then you develop all good qualities. So if we see, the only point of seeing that we have bad qualities and all that is to be inspired to solve that problem with the only way it can be solved is devotional service. But if in seeing our bad qualities and we're unqualified, so then we become disheartened and not inspired to do devotional service, that's technically a material approach. Because we're thinking we're the body, we're the mind, we have bad qualities, so therefore what can we do about it? And you can't really do anything about it on the material platform. So the only thing you can do is cultivate the qualities of the soul. And the soul having those qualities, they'll manifest it through the gross and subtle body rather than the qualities of the gross and subtle body is what we identify with, so that's what we work with. You understand? We have to transcend the process. Devotional service is above all processes that are presented. People say, oh, but these people, they're nicer than us, or these ones are more successful than us. And it's all that's just all material talking. The real thing is that devotional service being transcendental, it has nothing to do with all this. You don't have to deal with all this. It's like being in a mud puddle and trying to get yourself clean by taking the muddy water and rubbing it on yourself, right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's not going to get anywhere. So the only thing is get out of the mud puddle and go take a bath. So that's the point. You have to get out of the material consciousness and absorb oneself in the devotional process. That's it's the only solution to any problem. I mean literally any problem. You got a hangnail. The only thing that's going to get rid of it is being Krishna conscious. You can go through mechanics, but the point is, why do you have a hangnail in the first place? Right? Because of some sin. Why is the sin there? Because of a sinful desire. Seed. Why are those seeds there? Because we maintain mundane consciousness. We get rid of the mundane consciousness, we burn up those seeds, and eventually the hangnail will go away. Doesn't mean you don't go through the mechanical process. But that's just what you do. Secondary is always used to serve primary. But if we think the secondary will actually produce the result, then we're foolish. Like you said, Krishna is the potency of the herbs, not the medicine, not the recipe. Right? Not that it's this flower or this, you know, this root. No, it's because Krishna is there in it. That's why it works. The external won't work at all. Does that make sense? Yeah. So when that's clear, then we can commit ourselves to the devotionalist process. And as we make mistakes, then we understand is why are the mistakes made? Because it doesn't happen because of our potency. It's still Krishna's potency. We want to get purified. It's only by Krishna's potency, not our own potency. So it's our surrender to Krishna that then he's pleased and he removes these sins. So if they're not going away, because we're not surrendering, not because I'm austere and I'm this and I'm determined. No, we have to be focused on pleasing Krishna. Right? So when we're focused on that, then Krishna being pleased, then he'll remove it. We can't remove it. How do we remove, you know, the sins of unlimited lifetimes that we've been here? We have no idea how long we've been here. How are we going to get rid of all that? You can't. Krishna can. It's just a moment's surrender. And it only takes a moment because it's all an illusion anyway. It's kept there because you say it's there. It's just like, you know, how long do the toys stay in the child's room? Right? So many toys, full of toys. How long do they stay in the room? Right? As long as the child identifies with them. When they stop identifying with them, they go in a box and go in the, you know, go in the, get put away somewhere. So that's the whole point, is they're there because we identify with it. Because if you get rid of them, what are you going to do? Right? You take all the toys away and tell the kid, grow up. You know? It doesn't work. So therefore, Krishna keeps there what you identify with. But when you stop identifying with it, when you stop trying to get some material benefit from those, and only see whatever you're doing in connection with Krishna, then Krishna deals accordingly. So what you keep nicely for Krishna, you use that way, and what you don't, then he doesn't. Right? Does that make sense? You know, the kid can get rid of the toys in his room? Not at all. You understand? So that's the whole point, is that these bad qualities, they'll go away by Krishna's arrangement. But we have to want them to go away. We have to, not that that's the focus, we want them simply because if they're not there, we can focus on Krishna more. So it's not that, oh, I never want to forget you, but I'm not worried about remembering you. Right? The point is remembering Krishna, and why don't we remember? Because we forget. So the point is primary is remembering Krishna, not forgetting him because of the secondary, that's the never forget. So in other words, the secondary we see in relation to Krishna, and therefore we always remember. Does that make sense? Till it comes to the point about Krishna. So that's why you see the Brajbasis, no matter what the secondary form is, they always remember Krishna. Other realms get distracted. Like that. It's just like in Vrindavan, Uddhava can come and talk about how Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and it doesn't bother them. You do that in Dwarka, it maintains their devotion, but they drop from the particular loving relationships down to Dasya, because he's God, right? You know, it's like when Krishna killed Kamsa and all that, his mother and father just standing there with folded hands. He comes to them and offers obeisances. Mother and father, they just stand there with folded hands. He's God. They don't see themselves as his parents. He has to extend the yoga maya again, so they start behaving that way. And in Vaikuntha, if you get into too much things with sweetness and that, they freak out, as we see with Gopakumar. He gets up there, starts playing his flute and shucking and jiving with the Lord, and everybody else goes, psst, hey, don't do that, you know. You know, you know, it's just they take him to the side, right? You know, this is uncool. You don't do this. So that's the whole point, is that it gets to the point where you're so much remembering Krishna, you can't forget him under any circumstance. There's nothing. So that's the whole point, is this cultivating the devotional process in a positive way. That's really what you want to do. And all this stuff of sitting around and going, oh, I'm so useless, I'm so disgusting, that won't get you anywhere. Other people will be very pleased with it, other materialists. But pure devotees, they don't see the importance of it because it's attachment to illusion. Does that make sense? Like that. So we even have to give up the attachment that I'm so useless. You know, like that. We're just a servant. And so then, what's our situation? We try to serve. Does that make sense? Yeah. Something more? Over here?
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, just wanted to know that Prabhupada gave these scriptures from Isopanishad to C.C. Chaitanya Charitamrita.
From Isopanishad to C.C.
No, Isopanishad to Nectar of Devotion, Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam. It's all given to us to systematically understand Krishna. So systematic study to understand Krishna. So this knowledge, according to your class today, is the way you explain that all other aspects is to come to the conclusion to understand Krishna, whatever you do.
Yes.
So while dealing with Prabhupada's books, and we are aware that as soon as you read Upanishad, then Prabhupada speaks, that means the end conclusion in our consciousness should be that it is for Krishna, it is for Krishna,
yes,
all the books. But what happens when you go up to half of the books like Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavatam, sometimes the mind is diverted. Or maybe you...
Or the mind is diverted.
Diverted, or you stop thinking of that kind of things. That
I'm not sure I quite understand the question.
That means that you are not steady in your consciousness that all these scriptures is meant for Krishna. So is that called unsteady study?
Unsteady study.
Yeah.
Is this unsteady study? Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're saying, what is it? Anishta Swadhyaya. Yeah? Okay. The point is that if you always understand why we're studying, it's to be able to know about our relationship with Krishna, who Krishna is, who we are, what is our relationship, how to be involved in devotional service. So that's what we're studying, is actually the process of devotional service. Because if we only study knowledge, then that's a secondary aspect. Because bhakti, just by itself, on its own, means when the bhakti kripa first starts, the first two leaves that are unfurled are knowledge and detachment. You know, and that's just when it sprouts. Then it has to get from here, out of the universe, to Goloka, to Krishna's lotus feet, and then produce fruit. So this is just the beginning. So knowledge and detachment are just, they just come on the side. And those are the undersides of the leaves. You know what I'm saying? So they're not even the major aspect of the leaf. You understand? So if we're studying because of knowledge, then it's a beginning, but because it's connected to Krishna, it will always be beneficial and always be purifying. You know, that's why someone who comes with the, jigyasu, they want to know. But it's not so much about God, it's just, it seems like an interesting area. They just had questions, they just want these to be answered. You know, so it's just like an intellectual need rather than an emotional need or a facility need like the other neophytes. So, if that's there, but if we maintain the attachment to the knowledge and think that's the knowledge itself that makes us special or advanced, then we'll run into an obstacle because we'll have so much knowledge, but we find that people aren't appreciating, they're not recognizing us for the knowledge. Some people are, the smart ones are, but everybody else isn't. And the funny part is those smart ones are the same ones that say no one's recognizing them either because of their attachment to knowledge. So the whole point is attachment to knowledge, attachment to karma or results. These two things will always be impediments. In the beginning, we're connecting them to Krishna, but if we forget about Krishna in our pursuit of, improving the quality of them, then it reduces Krishna's pleasure. So the result of satisfaction we get and everyone else gets less and less. But if we're simply surrendered to Krishna, then there's more and more. So it's not about it, the pleasing the Lord, us being pleased, other Vaishnavas being pleased, you know, other living entities being pleased, has nothing to do with the performance of our knowledge and skills. It has to do with our devotion to Krishna. Right? Because Vaishnavas in the pure state, they're always appreciated. But materialists who have great knowledge and skills, you know, they always have people that don't like them. Right? So that's the point. And the more they identify with it, and the more they think they're special, the less people like them. So in other words, our philosophy still stands. What we say is the proper thing still applies, we can see, even in the materialistic world. All the things we say, they should be humble, they should be this, respectful to others. People that are like that, people respect them more. And those that are, you know, self-entitled and all these things, the people don't like them, actually. You know, they'll respect them that they're so skilled and knowledgeable, but only when they need to use that area will they deal with them. Outside of that, they won't deal. So it's just, whatever we profess as the culture and that, it stands. Because it's Krishna's world. It's not that, oh, well, it's changed and it's the modern world and all that. It's still Krishna's place. You know what I'm saying? It still belongs to Krishna. You know, it's just like prisoners, right? You know, they can say all they want and we'll do our own thing and our own, you know, be ourselves and why, you know, like, but there's still authority. So it doesn't change. So we have to see is that when we're studying because it's about Krishna. So Krishna's pastimes, knowledge about Krishna, all these things, these are given to us by Krishna, by Lord Chaitanya, by the Acharyas, right? So Prabhupada's given us this essence, written these purports. And so if we approach through that to know how to understand and apply pure devotional service in our life with a goal to please Krishna, then we shouldn't run into that problem of, you know, reading and then finding we lose the taste. But if it's simply scholarship, then we'll see, yeah, we'll lose the taste. Because who wants to hear scholarship on Bhagavatam? You know, you sit down there and pontificate, nobody cares. And if you go out to the karmis, then they may appreciate that you have knowledge, but not the knowledge you have. So therefore, I have to switch into some mundane knowledge to be recognized. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Anything else? Or? No? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. I hope I remember correctly, you said if you want knowledge and skill, learn from the Mahabharata?
Yes.
So, I was just thinking...
It means if you're talking about just the regular material stuff, you're not so much worried about how to connect it to Krishna.
Okay.
You want to know how to connect to Krishna, that's Bhagavatam.
I was just speculating because when I go out and distribute books, a lot of people say I have Mahabharata. But they don't
have... You have Mahabharata.
They say, I have Mahabharata. Basically, they identify that as their spiritual book. Like, so they don't need any other books.
Yeah, it means it has the essence of the Vedic literature and the Bhagavad Gita, but do they have the purports to the Bhagavad Gita? Because the Gita also then says you have to surrender to a spiritual master. Do they have one? Right? And if they don't, then do they have Bhagavad Gita? Do they have Mahabharata?
Sorry, can you say that again?
It means they have Mahabharata, right? It's the essence of all the Vedic literatures. Then within the Mahabharata, then the pastimes of the Pandavas are the most essential point. And then within that, then that devotional process that the Pandavas are following is being given in the Bhagavad Gita. But now in the Bhagavad Gita, there's the purports of this Gita, which are given by the Acharyas, because you require... to be connected with Guru to understand the Bhagavad Gita. So do they have that Gita? Do they have that connection? So if they don't have Bhagavad Gita as it is, then they have a problem. I mean, if they have Ramanuja's Bhagavad Gita, then fine. But you know, someone like that, someone who's Vaishnava, they wouldn't say, I have Mahabharata. You know, they'd say something else. Yeah, I have the teachings of Ramanujacharya or Madhvacharya, like this. They wouldn't say, I have Mahabharata. Does that make sense? So that's great. So then, you know, they should be, are they reading it? You know, yeah, when I was 12, I read, yeah. So many things we did when we were 12, yeah. I was going to sixth grade when I was 12. So does that get you into university? Does that get you a job? Right? You go for the job interview. So what's your educational qualification? Well, I went to school when I was 12. Is that going to get him anything? No. So why does it that everybody has to say this? Everyone you meet, it's always when they're 12 they read Gita. I don't know why. I never heard anyone say 11 or 13. They always say 12. I don't know why 12. But whatever it is. So is that what you studied at that time, that's what's going to make it work for you now? No, it's what you're studying now is what's going to make it work now. Right? Even if they went to school, they have their degrees and all that, then in the corporate world, they're constantly refurbishing their knowledge. You know, every year there's some kind of course and this and that to upgrade their knowledge. So why aren't they doing that? Because, I mean, the material they're doing, why not the spiritual? Since spiritual is more important. So you can tell them that they have to upgrade their knowledge. You know, they read Mahabharata, that's great. But now what about what's the latest thing you're doing to improve yourself? And if you do that when you're 50, then, you know, why don't you make money when you're 50? You know, forget it now, just do it then. You know what I'm saying? So it's all their arguments and they collapse on themselves if you apply them. But just be pleasant, be nice, and persistent. Yes? Anything else? No? Is there any? Is there any impact on this spiritual topic in material education? If I get spiritual knowledge, will it have an effect on my material education? It means if you properly understand it, yes, because you'll see all material knowledge in connection with how its usefulness connection to the Lord. So, yes. But if you don't see, then you get distracted. Problem is material knowledge tends to carry a false identity with it that I'm very intelligent and I'm learned because I went through all the trouble. So then people tend to identify with it. And so that's a problem. So as long as they identify with the material knowledge, then how will they progress? Because they think I'm a scholar rather than I'm a devotee. And if they think, no, because I'm a scholar, I'm a better devotee, then they really have problems. So yes, if you see it properly, you can. It means all the Vedic knowledge can have an effect on whatever you're doing on the material platform. I mean everything. It can't function. Otherwise, how are the gopis seeing everything connection to Krishna? And they're going through full householder life. So it's not that, oh, they're just, you know, dancing around at night in the you know, groves of Vrindavan. No, they have houses to maintain, babies to feed, lunches to cook and serve, pots to wash. You know, cow dung patties to make, you know, going to the market. They have all that to do. So, but they see it all in connection to Krishna, so then why can't we?
Progress better than the people, those are only getting the material education.
Means when you say progress, you have the material and spiritual, someone else only has the material, so you'll progress better than them. Yes, but the point is how do you define progress? So progress is defined as becoming more God conscious. Materially, what's going to happen, that you can't say, because no materialist can say by material knowledge you'll progress. Right? They can't say that either. They can't guarantee. Right? Is there any guarantee you went to college, you got your degree, you're going to get a job, you're going to make lots of money, you're going to move up in the company, you're going to become rich and famous? You know, can they guarantee that? No. You know, only some, how you say, advertisements on some walls in Calcutta say 100%, you know, job placement and all this kind of stuff. No one else does that.
So
therefore, you can't say. So as far as whatever you're going to get, you're going to get whatever you're going to get. But the point is, because you see it in connection with Krishna, you'll get an eternal benefit, while the other person will only get whatever temporary benefit they get from the knowledge and skill they have, and that's it. So the devotee will get both, the temporary and the eternal. Well, they'll only get the temporary. And the temporary is whatever it's going to be.
So, Prabhuji, just one person say that if I will cultivate a spiritual topic, then my mind is more concentrated than the people though have only material education.
Means you can go into those things, but that by devotees there'll be more. Yes, you can say, but that's not our point. We're not trying to sell Krishna consciousness because materially you'll do better. You know, I mean, some people may do that, but then if things don't go well, then what? Are they going to explain to them how karma works? You know, if you're Elmer Fudd, it doesn't matter if you're a devotee or not, there's still going to be putty tats and all kinds of things there to harass you. You know, it's just the way it works. Yes.
Thank you for a very wonderful class, Maharaj. Focusing on the essence versus details. These days, I'm observing that quite a good number of devotees, they have taken a certain type of perspective. They say that our ISKCON movement began with a big bang, with missionary activities and neglect of children and neglect of health of devotees and such kinds of things in the days of Srila Prabhupada. And after a decade or two, eventually things fell apart. And now our movement is actually working towards sustenance.
Now it's going towards sustenance.
Sustenance. So they say that...
Sustenance.
Sustenance in terms of health of devotees, care for the devotees, and first, you know, have your legs in the ground before you can have your head in the clouds.
Have your legs in the ground before you can have your head in the clouds. But then they're saying that the ground and the clouds are connected. Right? Then they're saying that by mundane welfare work, mundane activities of social activities, that's the foundation for spiritual life. Can they give some evidence for that?
Can they discuss
philosophy based on that?
No.
No. So this is the whole point, is that it's surrender to Krishna. When they say it started with a bang, right? And just for their, you know, just for reference, their whole modern professional world is going nicely because scientists believe in a big bang, so they can't get too grumpy about big bangs, right? In fact, I think they're on the 11th season now, so it's quite popular, right? Okay, so now this bang, what was the bang? Can they explain the bang? What's the bang?
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, I wish to clarify my question.
No.
I am not talking about the non-devotees.
I know. I'm talking directly about devotees.
Devotees
who are educated professionals, who make good amounts of money, you know, are very expert at doing what they do,
yes,
and everything like that. And
yeah.
I'm talking about those devotees. Why would I talk about the karmis? We never talk about the karmis.
Yeah.
So, like that.
Maharaj,
so therefore,
when, yes,
what's the big bang? What was the bang? What made the bang a bang? Can they explain that?
Pure devotional service.
Yes. So now, is there ever a problem in pure devotional service?
They feel it has.
Yes. So then therefore, just according to Shastra, will their spiritual life ever be viable and sustainable, since sustenance is their main thing? Will it be viable? If you don't have faith in Guru and Sadhu and Shastra, do you have actually any position in spiritual life?
No.
Yes. Okay. So that's the whole point, is that it was surrender. It's the same thing that Bali Marsh. He surrendered to the Lord. Now, the whole point is, what's the more difficult thing? Surrendering to the Lord or being materialistically knowledgeable, skilled, cultured? Which of the two is more difficult?
Yeah, surrender to the Lord.
Surrender to the Lord. So first let them surrender, then they can talk about a big bang in that. Otherwise, they should not talk out of their, pay grade. In other words, when they're down in the first nursery school, right? Because in India you have two nurseries, two kindergartens. So I'm talking about, you know, day one on, you know, or day three. Give them a little break here. I wouldn't want to be too, you know, uncompromising. In the nursery school, and then now they're going to talk about the PhD level, you know? They're going to talk about something higher, or at least even, you know, secondary school or something. And then they're going to talk with such, you know, as if they have such authority. The point is what's missing? So in other words, they don't know what's missing. They can only say there's a big bang. Okay, it's pure devotional service, but I guarantee you, you're saying that, not them. You're observing that. They wouldn't have a clue what it is. They'll just take it by the secondary external forms of preaching. They won't actually understand it's the surrender to Prabhupada, that they're willing to do anything for Prabhupada, give up anything, go anywhere. Like that. People started temples, going to a place with no money, no contacts, no place to stay, no food, no nothing. They would just go someplace, find a public place, sit down, start doing some kirtan. People come around, they start talking and all this and that, and then they'd end up having a place to stay and making devotees, and then after 3 months they had a temple. Name me one person from this group you're talking about that would give up anything that they have. They won't give up nothing. These people walked out. These, and we're not talking about bums off the street. We're talking about kids from aristocratic, wealthy families that just saw that all the things that everybody's saying the secondary is so important, they just saw how hollow it was and gave it up. But they didn't know how to turn to real spiritual life, so they just became hippies. And then Prabhupada came and showed them what was real spiritual life. You understand? So, we're not even talking on the same page here. Talk sustenances. They can't maintain nothing if they tried. I mean, literally, on the spiritual platform. They may organize things nicely, but as far as the spiritual environment, because, you know, does that make sense? So, now, what's the whole point to be made here? Now, let's look at it scientifically. What's there is the primary was then. Now, if I'm going to give you the primary or the secondary, you're starting new. You know nothing. Which should I give you first, primary or secondary? Primary, because that can be learned and understood immediately. Secondary, that's going to take years and years and years to train. What's a gurukul training? Standard, just according to the regular standard scriptural. 12 years, right? Okay, so you're going to wait 12 years before you give them the actual thing? So that means, and Prabhupada was here for 11. Okay, so now what's happening is you get the primary thing of surrender to Krishna, which they did. Now, in that, you still have to teach them the secondary, how to behave, how to interact, how to deal with everything. That takes time. And so now these smug people are going to say that, oh, well, that was that didn't work, and now we're doing the real thing, as if they understand the difference between matter and spirit. That's the first verse of Bhagavatam. Truth is the difference between matter and spirit. And so they can't tell the difference. And I mean it, literally. You want to have a discussion with them on philosophy, they can't do it. They may know so many facts and figures and shlokas and that, but they only know them from the secondary point of view. They don't actually understand the primary, which is surrender to Krishna. Sarva dharmam parityaja. They're saying, no, no, we have to practice these religious principles. That's what makes devotional service. Bhakti is dependent upon my mundane morality. And not only that, it's not morality given in the Vedas. It's the morality that me and my friends from who went to, you know, all these good schools and all this and that, what we say is the real thing, not what the Vedas say. So it's not even theistic. So it's morality. But it's non-theistic morality. And it's not seen in how it connects to Krishna. They say, oh, but if you're not nice, people won't accept it. Why did those people join at those times? We're going to say all of them were idiots because they joined it. They were uncultured. Ambarish Prabhu is uncultured and a fool because he joined back then when people were all rough and ready. No, they're so intelligent, they see beyond the secondary to the primary. They have the secondary. In other words, real successful people will never say this. Only quasi people who are proud of their materialism will say this. And I mean that.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Does that make
nice.
Sense? So in other words, they should stop trying to do this and try to... In other words, they're trying to give weight to their materialistic attachments and try to pawn it off as spiritual life.
Yeah.
This doesn't mean that devotees aren't cultured and do everything nice. But when you're coming from the Mlecha and Yavana backgrounds, you can't expect that they're going to be fabulous day from day one. They'll still smell like Mlechas and Yavanas. You know, just like these corporate people still smell corporate. I mean like stinky corporate, you know, like Limburger cheese corporate. You know what I'm saying? You know, they don't even know about, you know, normal, what is it called? Not casual, non-corporate Friday, where they just stop talking all the jargon and just behave like normal human beings. You know, it's not, you know, so like, give it up. Is that the pure devotional service, what we're doing, the culture's there, it's all in Prabhupada's books. If people don't pick it up because they're not cultured, that's not the book's fault, that's not the movement's fault, that's not the Big Bang's fault. And then they're going to switch it and say that their mundane morality, now that's the cat's meow. And then how well does that mundane morality, when this group of people you're talking about go around the world and preach, how well do they do in establishing it in those yatras? It falls on its face, literally. They may think it's going great, but literally it's falling on its face. Why? Because no one else buys their particular brand of morality. They have their own. If you want to get mundane on morality, every country has its own morality. So why should they buy, you know, Bombay morality? You know, even in Delhi they don't like it. And they're definitely not going to follow it in Chennai. They're too practical. In Bengalis, it doesn't have enough personalness. So no one will buy it. They might take a few of the external forms, but the actual mood, no one wants. So one has to be very, very careful to tell the difference between what's spiritual and what's material. And yes, devotees are supposed to be cultured, but what's the solution? Only devotional service can make you cultured, because this other thing that you're talking about, that's very, very arrogant. That's like putting aside work that all of them together could not do what one person did. You know what I'm saying? You've got thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of professional people, but I think you only in your circle have about 7 temples. You know? But in those days, one devotee go out and start a temple on his own. He heard about Krishna consciousness, they're there in New York. Then Mukunda just goes to the West Coast, San Francisco. Prabhupada shows up after a few months. There are 50 devotees that are there. And what are they talking? Direct philosophy. We're the soul, we're not the body, we're servant of Krishna. Developing love for Krishna is the ultimate goal of life. The process is through chanting. That's the essence of philosophy. I mean literally. Everything else is simply supporting these three things. That's what Lord Chaitanya said. Every one of those hippies knew that. You look at it. George Harrison's introduction of the Krishna book is talking about how Krishna is in everything and how people, what they're looking for in their life is Krishna in everything. And these professionals you're talking about wouldn't have a clue about that, but these hippies knew it. So, you know what I'm saying? So this is the problem, is that we're not understanding what was there and what was lacking. What was lacking was simply being cultivated in how to just behave nicely. They as karmis didn't behave nicely. So as devotees, they didn't behave nicely. It's not that they were fabulous as karmis and then as devotees, they became rat bags. You know? You understand? So that's the whole point. It's just you act according to your conditioning. Then it gets purified and then it develops. And it takes a long time because we're dealing with unlimited lifetimes to purify. And simply because someone's at a more pious background in the cycle of samsara when they take up devotional service, that of course is special and that's good. But if they're proud of that, what's the difference between them and the smartest? You know what I'm saying? Like, where were they? Where were their fathers? Where were their grandfathers? They weren't coming forward. Krishna consciousness was there in India from that time. In fact, it was there in India 20 years before. Right? Prabhupada started in 44, started the BTG. Where were they coming forward? So, you know, who's the, you know, so it wasn't, at least there was a bang over there. Over here was, you know, the great fizzle. You know, the great useless, you know, Hindu, Shmindu, Bindu. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, what are we talking here? They already had their shot, and they wasted it. And then just by one person saying, okay, maybe there's something here. One Hindu gave him a ticket to America. All the rest of them couldn't care less. So it's not that all these people that are saying this, their grandfather didn't hear about Prabhupada. They just didn't care. So what's their position to make these comments about it's a big bang and now it's all gone, now we're into sustainability? They're not into sustainability. Sustaining what? Sustaining devotional life? And that's only if you understand the core, which is pure devotional service. That's all. Because these other things, Hindus have been doing that for a long time and doing much better. They live in little pigeonholes in Bombay. You call that maintenance? Like that? You know, if you have a nice bungalow and you have space and land, now that's maintenance. But they've given that up. They all have ancestral homes, but they don't even go there. Why? Because they want to be in the big bad city. You know, because this is where it's all happening, all the money. No, they could live very comfortably out there in the village. You know, they have land, they have all that stuff. Guaranteed. Right? Unless they already sold it. You know, but their father had it. He was living in Bombay, but it was still there. You understand? So all this talk is like, what do they mean, maintenance? You know what I'm saying? Like this. It's nice. It sounds great. But in reality, only pure devotional service sounds great. So we have to be very, very careful when we analyze these things, is that they had that surrender. They did so much. But Prabhupada was trying to introduce the culture and Varnashram and all that. Are they accepting the Varnashram? Right? Do they want to end up as Kayasthas? Because that's where many of them are going to end up. If you're from a Brahmin background, but you're having a job working for a Vaishya, you're a Kayastha. Are they going to buy that one? Yes. Yeah, so no. So then that's the culture. So they won't use the Vedic, they'll drop down into a modern atheistic thing just because then they can be prestigious because we're professionals, so we're on the top of the pile. But in the Vedic system, they're quite a ways down in the pile. Necessary, important, doing great work, but still, that compared to Brahminical things, preaching and teaching and all that, no comparison. You understand? Prabhupada, Krishna, you know, is go Brahmana hachayacha, not go bureaucrat hitayacha. You know? Just because they start with a B, don't mix them up. Okay? Okay. So end here. We're getting late. Jai. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jai Natai Gaur Premanandi.